Welcome to News from a Boring Dystopia. Today we discuss the ongoing Greco-Turkish conflict. Today we introduce guest Xenophon Kaligaropoulos from the University of Leicester and majoring in international history at the London School of Economics. We had a 10-minute conversation regarding pronunciation of his name, so my apologies in advance. Introducing Xenophon.
Good to be here, and I appreciate the effort put in the pronunciation of my name. That should be a degree in and of itself, pronouncing Greek last names. I'm really glad to be here, and I hope that I can offer as much of an insight into this. Maybe we can start discussing definitions, conflict, you know, the way I would say it's a centuries-old Cold War with more warm periods and then colder periods. We are definitely in one of the warmer periods right now. And yeah, just...
What's going on in the news? Well, today is Sunday, the 15th of November. Something very interesting is going on. Why don't you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, so, I mean, what's going on today is one more in the latest series of Turkish provocations in the Eastern Mediterranean. Although they have toned it down recently, perhaps due to the focus on the Azerbaijani-Armenian conflict, which also came to an end very recently. But what happened today is that President Erdogan of Turkey visited the occupied territories in northern Cyprus, along with obviously high-ranking Turkish officials, but most importantly, the leader of the so-called Grey Wolves, is the English translation, who are an extremist nationalist, Turkish nationalist group operating within and without Turkey. So the leader of them, his name is Devlet Bahçeli, very outspoken, obviously, when it comes to the conflict and everything. On that point, I think it was also this week or the previous that in France, the Grey Wolves, so the contingent of the Grey Wolves in France, was declared an illegal organization by the French Republic due to the fact that they would go out into the streets, not just about what's going on more generally in France due to the cartoons and political Islam, and they would chant, you know, Turkish nationalist slogans, also Islamic everything that has to do with the whole Mohammed cartoon thing. So that's like a nice aside. But anyway, so Erdogan and Bahçeli, they visited the occupied territories in northern Cyprus, which caused a big reaction by the president of the Cypriot Republic, Nikos Anastasiades, as well as the Greek Foreign Affairs Ministry, predictably. And it's obviously a very blatant kind of provocation because the United Nations Security Council has passed resolutions with regards to the status of those disputed, let's say, territories between the Cypriot Republic and Turkey. Obviously, in the eyes of Turkey, that is not exactly a provocation, as it considers this visit being between one state, which is the Turkish Republic, and then the so-called Turkish Republic of Northern Cyprus, which, as I mentioned briefly before, it is not really recognized internationally except by Turkey itself, and I believe Pakistan, although I'm not sure on the latter. And this visit took place today, like I said, 11 to 12 p.m. local time, and it was in the city of Varosh, in close to the city of Amorostos, which is basically a ghost town. It has been evacuated. All its Cypriot population obviously moved out a long time ago. And it had been agreed that it would remain empty, that this settlement would not be used by the Turkish authorities in any sort of way. And this kind of reclamation, as it is presented in the Turkish media today, is obviously a very, a provocation, essentially, flying in the face of not just Greece and Cyprus, but also the United Nations. And it also kind of signifies a kind of divergence in policy so far when it comes to the Cypriot issue, which is embodied by the new president, shall we say, of the illegal kind of state in northern Cyprus, Ersin Tatar, who now says that the only solution available is two different states of two different peoples. That was in a statement that this is the only viable solution. That's the word he used, the only viable solution. Whereas if we look before, his predecessor was much more open to the idea of Cypriot, Turkish, or let's say Greek Cypriot, Turkish Cypriot rapprochement to create a kind of confederates, like a confederation between the two sides, basically, with the model of, let's say, Bosnia in mind. Obviously, that's in the past, because now we see a difference in policy with a very distinct kind of division between the two parts of Cyprus. And also, this is not just a random visit. It's also on the 37th anniversary of the declaration of Northern Cyprus as a state by Turkey, obviously. So it's not just a random visit. Oh, and the resolutions in question by the UN are 550 and 789, which are being referenced by the Cypriot Republic as being disrespected by through the visit of the Turkish president. So that is what is going on today. And that's why it's so interesting kind of that we, you know, decided to discuss this today as well. It's one more action on the part of Turkey that kind of defies any kind of dream that there had been with regards to Turkish European integration and Turkey coming closer to the EU, because we're obviously talking about the very obvious defiance of the sovereignty of a European member state, in that case, Cyprus. Obviously, this comes after the same kind of breach of sovereignty of Greece, another European member state, and of course, the escalation with France. All of this is just, it's all connected in a way. This is not a random move by Turkey, which I think has taken Erdogan himself has taken a double-pronged approach. First of all, always kind of supporting Turkish nationalism, and we could say neo-Ottomanism, but at the same time, assuming a more pan-Islamic approach, kind of trying to present Turkey as the defender of Muslims worldwide, which is why Erdogan himself and Turkey took such a harsh stance on the matter of France and the Mohammed cartoons. Obviously, nothing is isolated in that sense when it comes to international politics. Also, the kind of indignation on the part of Turkey comes after a decision to reject the use of Turkish imams in France. It's not just Turkish imams, obviously, it's also from Algeria, Morocco, Egypt as well. France has now refused to employ imams coming from foreign countries, and it wants a different approach to Islam within its borders. So that's like kind of the monologue at an end here. So we can maybe
I'm kind of frustrated because I almost you answered all the questions that I was about to make to you, but I mean it's more like a strategic one that I want to ask. Mm-hmm. As you said, I think you're very on point saying that Erdogan wants to increase his new Ottomanism and defender of the Islam, this kind of the desecularization of Turkey, right? I mean, hence in this Islam and Muslim identity, and I mean, as a way to integrate and be against the Christian Club of European Union, right? So, but do you think, like, I mean, Erdogan is throwing critics on France relating to freedom of speech, saying that's kind of racism and Islamophobia. But I mean, Greece, talking about your country, do you think that Greece can be dragged by this tension between Paris and Ankara, even though Greece is, I mean, not willing to escalate the situation, or I mean, like, would be more like focus on France, but in the end of the day, it would be like a more France and Turkey than, because France is a major power compared to Greece, the two more direct actors, like Greece and Greek community in Cyprus and the Turkish one.
Yeah, what do you think about it? I think that Greece should definitely capitalize on the tensions between France and Turkey at the moment. France being a kind of an unexpected guest in this West what had been, I think, wrongfully a local conflict, because I do think that the kind of tensions between Turkey and Greece or Cyprus, Turkey and Greece or Cyprus and Turkey, are not just that. They're not just Eastern Mediterranean localized conflicts. I think that they do have a lot to do. They have a lot to do with the European Union itself. And so France is kind of a surprise guest here in this, and has kind of brought it up to the fore of European politics and European foreign policy. So that's a very good thing. And I think Greece could definitely capitalize on that in any way possible, align itself, obviously, with French policy in the Aegean and in Eastern Mediterranean. Though I do think that Greece should not really consider this a given, and that obviously the vicissitudes of international politics can turn any which way. And Greece should not think that France is here to stay. And I think that Greece should plan its foreign policy with that in mind. We saw the case of Armenia recently, a very sad, if that's kind of a personal comment, a very sad outcome, in the sense that Armenia did expect the international community to kind of come in its favor.
Especially from the Christian countries, right?
Yes, yes. And Russia as well, although Pashinyan, the prime minister, had a more Western focus, which might have something to do with why Russia kind of seemed to support Azerbaijan more than Armenia in this case. But the major mistake, I believe, in Armenia in this is expecting the help of other states to come in and assist, where it's just you need to plan your foreign policy and any kind of operation of that scope, especially when it comes to military matters, as if you don't have any support. And if support comes, then that's great, and you can plan based on that. But I do think that Greece, what is going on now with France, is a very new phenomenon. Greece, for the past decade, two decades, in fact, even more so 30 years, where there have been this tensions between Turkey and the Hellenic Republic, has had to deal with these issues alone and has had to contend with a very apathetic European Union, which just relied on statements and declarations of support, but nothing tangible. What is going on now with France, obviously, is different. And it is different in a very good way, but nothing and absolutely nothing tells us that it is a permanent kind of situation. And so I do think that Greece should definitely make hay while the sun still shines, but our long-term policy should be one of let's be self-reliant as we can, because no one tells us that in the case of a wider conflict that we would receive the support that we would be expecting, exactly because in the past it has not happened this way. And so we should plan with the kind of thing in mind that it will not happen in the future either.
Something that struck me, particularly with one of the things that you said, is that it's not the first time, more than anything else. I remember that you and I had a similar conversation back at the start of March, particularly with the situation during January, where you had the strikes in Lesbos, Samos, and Chios. Mm-hmm. And then you obviously had a whole we had a whole discussion, which I'm gonna pass on to you in a minute. But something also that is worth bringing up, and I think you have, but that we haven't put a name to it, was the 2016 EU-Turkey deal. And this, in the complete case of what is the migrant crisis. So do you want to talk a bit more about that?
Yeah. So I mean, that was a very important moment in not just Greek and Turkish relations, because Greek and Turkish relations, that's kind of a business as usual, if I can call it that. What happened in January and February of 2020, Turkey essentially pushing waves upon waves of immigrants and refugees toward the Greek borders in an attempt to undermine them, obviously. That is nothing new. Obviously, the sheer scale of it was what kind of brought it up to the spotlight. But this is something that has been Turkish policy since the beginning of the refugee crisis, being that if it doesn't directly sponsor traffickers bringing refugees and migrants to Greece, then it definitely allows them to continue their activities in a way to undermine the Greek position in the Aegean, being that Greek islands are, figuratively speaking, a stone throw away from Turkey, from Turkish shores. And so the agreement between Turkey and the European Union is kind of a very it's a success, I would say, of Turkish foreign policy more than anything else, how it kept the European Union into a stranglehold, basically, blackmail that either you acquiesce to our demands or we open the floodgates. And what happened in January and February is that the floodgates were indeed open, and several videos came out of Turkish officials this time, not just traffickers, but Turkish officials putting people into buses, driving them up to the Greek border. In this case, Evros, which is the land border shared by Turkey and Greece and Bulgaria as well. That needs to be mentioned. It wasn't just Greece that was involved in this particular incident, but also putting them in boats and just sending them on their way to Greece. And so that's kind of the moment where the masks kind of fell, and we could really see how opportunistic Turkey's policy with regards to immigration and the refugees is, because previously, the way Turkey presented itself was that it was one of the countries, admittedly, yes, that is true, that had accepted the most refugees from Syria and Iraq mainly. And that was kind of a plus for Turkey being presented as this humanitarian state that accepted refugees. It kind of helped to perhaps clean a little bit of Erdogan's more questionable internal politics. However, with this kind of, I think it was a watershed moment where Europe realized that there is no kind of bargaining with Turkey, that the demands of Turkey turned more and more erratic, because we must remember that this wasn't done just like that. It was at the same time that Turkey attempted to invade northern Syria, and it was quite comprehensively pushed back by Kurdish and also Assad forces in the area. And so it asked European support for that quite unreasonably, I would say. And it was refused, obviously, because those demands were, like I said, too erratic. And so the masks fell, and I think European Union, or at least many states within, realized that the deal is null and void, because no matter what we do, the demands of Turkey will increase in their scope. And so the climate kind of changed. And I think Greece's response had a lot to do with that Greece presented a very strong and united kind of front to that, which comes in direct opposition to the previous government's policies, which were much more compliant. This government, which was newly elected in July of 2019, is center right, as opposed to the previous government, which was center left. And so Greece succeeded in presenting itself as kind of the lone defender of European borders in the face of Turkish aggression. And I think it was a kind of a PR success in that regard. And that has a lot to do with what Turkey has been facing in the recent months and in 2020 in general, which has been a PR disaster. Firstly, with that, with the migrant and the refugee kind of crisis and the way it manipulated it, because it showed a very opportunistic face to the world. But obviously with subsequent bungles, I would say, we all remember the turning of the Hagia Sophia Museum into a mosque, which, you might say, that is one way to look at it, that, oh, religion doesn't really matter in international politics in the 21st century. Well, apparently it does, because a lot of people cared about it. Greece also obviously had something to say about that, being one of the Greek Orthodox states in the area. Obviously, the turning of more kind of churches within Turkey into mosques as well. Then you had the crisis with the various maritime economic zones and the agreements between Turkey and one of the governments in Libya, the eastern kind of a government in Libya, and then the agreements between Egypt and Greece and Israel. Basically, Turkey, with its activities, forced countries that would not normally be that much aligned into alignment. And it found itself increasingly isolated diplomatically in that regard. Though I will say that what happened now with the Armenia-Azerbaijan peace treaty is definitely a success for Turkey. It increases Turkish influence in the region exponentially, and Azerbaijani by extent.
Yeah, very interesting insight that you gave us. I mean, it's another challenge for the EU to be a comprehensive bloc, take care of their own, because actually, if you look at the numbers, Turkey has is more economically, militarily and more like geopolitically importance than, I wouldn't say more than Greece, because Greece taken a lead role in this geopolitics of the Mediterranean area. But I mean, I don't see that, a mask fell, for example, because Turkey is using their weapons. I mean, as you said, Greece must be self-reliant, and I agree with that, because in the end of the day, as we have seen regarding to the Armenia case, the Christian community didn't rescue the Armenian cause, and the Russians and the France, Germany, and the other Christian powers was more like neglecting it. And in this way, I see it. I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but I'm saying that Turkey is using rationally what can. Open the gates to the flooding of immigrants, probably create another crisis in Europe. And because Turkey, as we said before, the nationalistic approach of Erdogan regarding to the role of Turkey in the area is making the country more sure of itself. So I think it's they see themselves too important to neglect. Mm-hmm. Turkey was like a close ally with the United States in the Cold War, but we don't live this world anymore. And I don't know, I think it's Turkey using the pure raison d'etat as like a friends. And because they're allies, actually. Legally, they're allies. NATO, the NATO agreement will make them fight together any kind of challenge or threat. So, I'm not saying that's easy. I'm not saying that. I just say that Turkey knows what he's doing. I'm not saying he's, as you said, no other action from Turkey is random or without a purpose, as Erdogan is like spreading his wings. And I think the European Union and the other countries, especially Europe, I'm not saying Russia, because I think Russia takes certain advantage with this situation, because the European bloc is being more weakened, but because of that, I say that it's more a fault from the European Union, because they didn't took more the attention they should to Turkey, and especially the Erdogan populism, because the problem has been created, and Europe another time has to show a unity inside the bloc. It's only up to time to see if the France, Germany, and other European powers will rescue Greece or...
I would say that Turkish foreign policy has indeed in the previous years been impeccable, and they have taken great advantage of certain situations, the migrant crisis being one, most definitely. And obviously Erdogan's kind of very radical shift in Turkish politics, from the secular Kemalist Young Turk approach that had been the rule until very recently, until at least 2000, year 2000, and the kind of neo-Ottoman ambitions that they have, the more Islamic kind of side of Turkey that has always been in fight with itself. This more secular Turkey, reformist Turkey, modern Turkey has always been in fight with itself, with the more authoritarian and Islamic elements within. But the issue with this is that in the previous years, and the way I present this is kind of, you have a local kind of football team and they win a very nice local championship. But then when you move to the national championship, the rules change. And I think when Turkey had only Greece to contend with, or Cyprus, or kind of the Kurds within the country, the PKK party within the Kurds, that was all well and good. The policy worked there because that's one thing. But then when you try to move into the big league and play with the major players in the region, Russia, and then you engage the United States in a much elevated level, that's when you run into trouble. That's when you run into enemies you didn't expect to have. One of them is France. Turkey, that's the thing. Up until the end of August of 2020, Turkey could not have foreseen the involvement of France. But that's the thing, that when you play in this sort of level of international politics, anything might happen. And that's when...
No, yeah. Here in Brazil, have an idiom expression who said, I mean, you can go on with your thought just to like make fun of Turkey. Sorry, Erdogan. I hope you don't listen to it. Who had, an idiom expression here in Brazil says like, who has only one eye in a land of blind people is the king. So it's like, as you said, it's easy to beat dogs. It's easy to beating dogs. I mean, when you go to bears or lions like France, United States, Russia, I mean, you shrink.
Exactly. And you're suddenly at a disadvantage because there are other spheres of influence that you didn't consider. And that's when Turkey is running into trouble. And now, with its kind of policy, it's not just this lonesome outpost of the European Union in the East, which was Greece. Now it's coming into conflict with many European states. You see that many states have come out in opposition, some more vocal, some less. Definitely one of them is France, obviously. But then Austria as well, Hungary, Poland, most of the Visegrad group has come out in support of Greece. And France, I think, it's a very intelligent move by Macron to try and present himself and France as a whole as now the main representative of European foreign policy, because that role has been woefully, in my opinion, been let down by Germany. And Germany, although it had always and has aspirations of leading the European Union, when it comes to foreign policy like that, it has sorely failed exactly, and in the interactions with Turkey, exactly because it has very important vested interests in Turkey, German industry in Turkey. It has a very big market for its products in Turkey. There are 80 million people in Turkey. It's not a few people there, as opposed to just...
A huge community of Turkish people in
Germany. Exactly. And that's the third bit, that a huge community of Turkish... There's a huge minority, Turkish minority in Germany that has some sort of influence, definitely. An influence that Erdogan has definitely worked to manipulate and take advantage of. So Germany, even now, refuses to take a very resolute and clear stance against Turkey. And France has very smartly taken advantage of this. And in doing this, it's kind of also forcing Germany to follow its lead. And when one power makes another great power follow its lead, then that power, in this case, France, takes precedence. It assumes more value. So that's why this unprecedented involvement of France is quite interesting to see, because we might see a shift in European foreign policy for more soft touch, which is, you know, treaties and investments and trade and all of that, to a more hard power. We're sending ships to the Mediterranean, to the Aegean Sea to defend European borders, which is what France has been doing. And it has been, you know, this approach has been condoned by many other European states. Like I mentioned, the Visegrad group, definitely Austria. So it's very interesting to see how Turkey will adapt to that. Because I don't see a way for Turkey to tackle this head on. Because if Turkey presents itself to be the aggressor, then that's it. That's game over. Even though it has a military superiority over Greece, not as much as it would like, definitely, but it does. And numerical, undoubtedly. If it loses the PR game, if the international community sees it a certain way, then that's game over in whatever conflict that is. Would it be a conflict like the Armenian-Azerbaijani one? Would it be a more prolonged conflict? We don't know. But if Turkey, through its actions, forces Europe to coalesce against it, then that's it. And I think it will, because if Turkey were to attack a European member state, be it Cyprus or the Hellenic Republic of Greece, then if the European Union doesn't respond to that, if the European Union doesn't immediately rally to the defense of Greece or Cyprus or any other member state for that fact, then that's game over for the European Union. Because we might engage in talks of European solidarity and integration and all of that. But the truth is that many of its member states are within the Union, not because of some idealistic belief in European unity, but because they're seeking protection, they're seeking benefits from the Union. And I think that in Eastern Europe, you already have this group, the Visegrad Group, which is acutely Eurosceptic in its politics. And those states like Poland and then some of the Baltic states definitely are in the Union primarily, I would say, for the economic benefits, definitely, but also for protection against who? Against Russia, this looming threat to the East. So if European Union collectively refuses to help Greece or Cyprus in such a scenario, then it would be very likely that these states would say, hey, you're not helping Greece and Cyprus against Turkey, and you will help us against Russia in a potential scenario? No way, we're out, because the only reason why we're in is for your protection. So in this case, I do believe that the European Union and European leaders, such as Germany and France, will be forced to take a side. And I'm optimistic that this side would be Greece's, the Greek side. Although obviously we always hope for peace and to not reach that kind of escalation in the region. Yeah.
So yeah, Xenophon, it's very interesting everything you've brought up. Particularly for me, what's most interesting is obviously, as you mentioned, the PR game and how impeccable Turkish foreign policy has been over the past few years. For me, I did a research on the Nagorno-Karabakh conflict ages ago, which is the one you're referring to as Armenia and Azerbaijan, back before it was even a thing. At the time, something that was most interesting to me was also the rise of the PKK, which I think that Turkish has managed to turn the PKK into a terrorist organization recognized as terrorists by NATO and such. And that will really set back any hopes for Kurdistan in any foreseeable future. And it's most worrying, as you say, how Turkey has been managing to get away with it, to say, for a lack of a better word, and the comparison that you would have between a Greco-Turkish conflict and the lack of help from the EU to Greece would be an interesting parallel to a hypothetical scenario with Russia. Now, we must be glad, however, the fact that Erdogan has gone down the Trump route and started shooting everywhere, which I think really undermines its current policy and will hopefully see a change in their foreign policy in the near future. The most concerning thing for me particularly is the social troubles that it might create in Greece. I know, for example, that you've got mandatory military service, and whilst I am personally opposed to such a thing, I understand the reasoning behind it and I understand the Greek perspective on it, which is mostly to be able to fulfill your security needs, which is completely understandable. Let's hope that Turkey does a 180 turn at some point just to preserve the European peace. But with that being said, thank you for all your expertise and thank you for bringing so many things to the table. And I think it's been a very valuable discussion. Antonio, do you have anything else to say?
Thank you for joining us, Xenophon. Hopefully, if you ever join us again, I pronounce your name correctly the next time. Hopefully this conflict can be resolved peacefully. Before we go, I just have a quick question. I'm not the most expert in this field. How do you feel about the American Greek system? Because we kind of, what are your thoughts on that really quickly before we go?
So the American Greek system, by that, what are you referring to exactly?
Like the togas and the like sigma chi rho, and then people get drunk and they wear the leaves. What are your thoughts really briefly before we go, just to make it a little bit lower?
You Americans have this kind of fetish regarding to these Greek letters. I've never understood this.
See, when you say Greek, like American Greek system, I'm thinking, wow, international politics, some kind of like system.
Bring
the discussion Greek really low.
Is that what it is?
It was soft power. Okay. It's a quick little thing. And I think that very briefly, I would say that a lot of ancient Greeks would be on board with it, you know, wearing togas, you know, getting with the boys, getting drunk. I think that that would be something
maybe. Yeah, since Troy, get it with the boys, get it with the drunk.
Yeah, get it with the boys, yeah, specifically. Yeah.
All right. So Xenophon approves of the Greek system, everybody in the States. Thank you so much, Xenophon. Follow Thank Xenophon you. On his social media. His Facebook is Xenophon Kalogropoulos. I'll link it in the description. Yeah. And of course, his Instagram is Foreign Voice. And make sure to follow us on the social media as well. Right now, our Instagram is looking really, really fresh. Follow us at From Boring D. From Boring D. Thank you so much.